This strange little man spanned the vast reaches of space to share pancakes with a chicken farmer from Eagle River, Wisconsin? If Joe Simonton's story is to be believed, yes. Yes, they did. I'm Alan Brill, and this is a brilliant tidbit, a nugget from the mind of Brill. Warning, it gets dark in here. A five-minute encounter in Eagle River, Wisconsin in 1961 will stand tall in the annals of not just ufology, but I dare say the history of mankind as one of the strangest on record. 60-year-old chicken farmer Joe Simonton slept in on the morning of April 18, 1961, and was enjoying a late breakfast when at around 11 a.m. the unbelievable happened. A sudden sound, which he described as being like that of tires going around a curve too fast, brought him out to his front porch, where he witnessed a flying saucer descend from the heavens. He later reported that it was silver, but brighter than chrome. He said it stood approximately 12 feet high and around 30 feet in diameter. It resembled two plates or bowls inverted over the top of each other. Almost immediately after landing, a hatch opened in the silver craft. He saw three dark-skinned humanoids about 5 feet tall inside, and they appeared to him to be wearing a uniform of sorts, dark blue or black with helmet caps and turtleneck collars. Simonton said they were, quote, Italian-looking. The three alien humanoids emerged from their craft, and Simonton noted they were carrying a beautiful thing, a thermos jug-like bottle, quite unlike anything I've ever seen here on Earth. The jug had two silver handles, and he had the impression that it was made from the same material as the craft. He said it appeared to be heavier than aluminum, but lighter than steel. Franklin Carter, who was a UFO researcher and a Wisconsin judge, reported that Simonton told him that he realized it wanted water. Simonton said he did not speak, but he motioned by tipping his head backward and making motions as if drinking. He took the jug from the silent visitor and went inside to fill it up with water from the sink. He returned and he handed the jug back to his visitor, who appeared to Joe to be appreciative. Now, as he passed it back, he leaned his left hand on the vessel, and by doing so, he got a better view of the inside of the craft, and he got a better look at the other two travelers. Now, Simonton said they were chained or belted to their workstations, and one was engaged at a panel in front of him, while the other was cooking food on a heating unit of some kind. I couldn't see any heated grill nor flames, yet he seemed to be cooking or frying cakes. I was interested in them, and the man in the hatchway noted my interest and walked over and scooped up some of them and gave them to me. They looked somewhat like pancakes. Now, upon receiving the water, the strange humanoid placed the tips of his right hand to his forehead and immediately withdrew it. Joe took this as a gesture of thanks and responded with a military salute, which he felt that the stranger understood as meaning, "You're welcome." This entire time, there was no verbal communication. The hatch shut tight again with no, as Joe says, seams, hinges, or telltale marks. It arose from where it was hovering a few inches above the ground, tipped slightly forward, and shot up into the sky. He saw a pine tree bend completely back as if from backwash from the saucer. The tree was undamaged. Now, Simonton ate one of the pancakes and later recalled to the press that it tasted like cardboard. Now, to his credit, he saved the other two. And as per UFO Insight, the small round cakes had perforated appearance of Scotch pancakes, but were rubbery or elastic and able to be bent and rolled and not break apart. Now, enter J. Allen Hynek into the story. People hold this man in such high regard, and frankly, I have no idea why. This is the guy that gave us swamp gas and the planet Venus as BS explanations for UFO encounters in the past. Not to mention that he is heavily implicated, if not outright responsible, for the theft of the Betz sphere. And he was the main investigator for Project Blue Book, which did more damage than good. They may have officially investigated these things for the government, but to the public, they were terrible about spreading misinformation and just debunking with, you know, such rotten excuses as, you know, swamp gas, and to make the experiencers feel and look like idiots. But hey, people seem to hold them in high regard, so I just don't get it. Anyway, he took this on as a case for Project Blue Book, and he sent the other two specimens in for analysis. It came back that they are made of wheat, flour, sugar, and grease. Now, here's the strange part. It's not what it did contain, but what it didn't. There was no trace of salt whatsoever. Not even natural salt. Every last crystal of salt had been removed. Now, in order for this to happen, the salt would have to be missing from every single ingredient. All right, now we get to the good stuff. Jacques Vallée and his groundbreaking book, Passport to Magonia, where in this book, if you haven't read it or don't know anything about it, he delves into the fairy lore and comparisons to modern UFO encounters. It's fantastic. And in his study of this case, he points out that in fairy lore, they have an extreme aversion to salt. Now, Vallée in this book often leans on Wentz. He's an American writer that was well-versed in fairy, or as he calls them, gentry lore. He says that not only would they not eat anything prepared with salt, but would only drink pure water, which is what Simonton's visitors asked for. Vallée also states that the military analysis was that the wheat used was buckwheat. Now, buckwheat is significant in gentry lore. Buckwheat hulls, which are closely associated with the legends of Brittany, one of the most conservative Celtic areas. Fairies, or fays, have an association with the race of beings known as Faeons. Now, one of the popular legends in the folklore is that a black cow belonging to cave-dwelling beings known as Faeons ruined the buckwheat field of a poor woman who bitterly complained about the damage. They made a deal with her. If she kept her mouth shut, they'd see to it she'd never run out of buckwheat cakes. Her family discovered that their supply of buckwheat cakes never ran out. One day, however, she gave a man one of the buckwheat cakes, a man who should never have been entrusted with her magical secret. And then the deal was off. Now, let's talk for a minute about the airship sightings that flooded America in 1897. Frank Nichols, this is according to the Houston Post, that an airship landed on his land and several short, dark humans approached him with a strange bucket and asked if they might draw water from his well. Another example from this time is Deputy Sheriff McLemore from Hot Springs, Arkansas, who claimed he witnessed the strange occupants filling sacks full of water. Nah, methinks this sounds awful familiar. Strange, dark little men stopping to get some water. Now, there was a man named Savino Borgo who was driving nearby at the time of Simonton's encounter and claimed to see a saucer-shaped craft rising into the sky at a high rate of speed. Now, I don't know if this was reported independently or after Joe's story came out and became popular. I think that might be significant. But as it stands, it could very well be corroboration really just put a slam dunk to this whole thing. But again, I don't know if it's independently or if he was maybe piggybacking on Joe's experience. But the report's out there. And speaking of credibility, let's look at Joe for a hot minute here. He was an upstanding member of the small Eagle River community. He was a plumber, he was an auctioneer, he even served as Santa Claus at the Chamber of Commerce events. And according to everyone who knew him, he was an all-around hell of a guy. He had little to gain, and in fact, he certainly faced ridicule for the telling of his story. And I don't know if he could or if he would go so far as to make completely salt-free flapjacks. That's would not be an easy endeavor. And another thing Joe's got going for him, he never once altered his story since first reporting it. No one who knew Joe thought that he was making it up. That's important. High character, upstanding citizen. Yeah, you might be asking yourself, or asking me, what was the result of the Project Blue Book investigation? Even they determined that Simonton did not manufacture the event. They said, nope, he's a good guy, straight shooter. He did not make this up. But he imagined the affair sometime while eating breakfast. Yeah, he believed it, but yeah, fell asleep, had a lucid dream in the middle of breakfast. Maybe a extreme hallucination. Now, they didn't have any explanation of what would bring this, extreme and lucid hallucination on. I guess if they were pressed to answer, they'd probably say swamp gas. They didn't even bother to address where the pancakes that he produced as evidence came from. So, yeah. Go Project Blue Book. Go John Allen Hynek. Now, earlier we mentioned that Joe had touched the craft. That's when he looked inside it. He appeared to never have any adverse health effects as a result of this. We know that sometimes happens, like in the Rendlesham Forest case and several others, but apparently touched it. It was okay. Had no adverse health effects, and I'm pretty happy about that. Now, I'm going to tell you, I absolutely love this case because, well, space pancakes. And I also love it because it is absolutely ridiculous, and I find it absolutely believable at the same time. And also, the Fae. Now, that's the story of Joe Simonton and the space pancakes. And I'll leave it up to you to see what you think. Was he just making it up, or was it a lucid dream? He wasn't making it up, but he imagined it and believed it was real. Or, did visitors come down and share their space pancakes with him? Whatever conclusion you come to, I think we can all lift a bottle of maple syrup and say, here's to you, Joe Simonton. Breakfast will never be the same again. I use a lot of sources for the story, but I mainly give credit to UFO Insight Online and, of course, Passport to Magonia by the legendary Jacques Vallée. Well, I'll see you all next time, and until then, please be careful, because it can get dark out there.